sanctions and Iran. It's as if these two words are becoming synonymous with one another, at least for the last three decades or so. Historically, US actions against the Young Islamic Republic speak for themselves. From the very beginning, things got off on the wrong foot. US-led sanctions against Iran are as old as the Islamic Republic itself. It was in 1979 that Washington started a sanction craze and froze up to $12 billion in Iran's assets after Iranian students took over the US Embassy in Tehran. In the 80s, after Iraq tried to invade Iran, Washington sided with Baghdad. It went even further by approving more sanctions on Tehran in 1984. Weapon sales to Iran were suddenly forbidden. The US did everything in its power to stop international financial institutions from handing out much-needed loans to Iran. In 1987, the imports and exports of any goods or services from Iran was targeted by the United States. And Iran never got the chance to catch its breath with embargoes that came non-stop and US-backed sanctions that have done everything to cripple Iran's economy to this very moment. In today's program, we'll take you inside a destructive pattern that began 32 years ago with Washington's first set of sanctions against the Islamic Republic. While the 80s left a deep and unforgettable scar in relations between Iran and the US, it was the 90s that saw matters take a turn for the worse. In 1995, US President Bill Clinton issued a total embargo on Iran. Any trade Tehran had with Washington came to a screeching halt. 1 year later, the US Congress passed the Iran-Libya Sanctions Act. Washington was set on turning the whole world against Iran. Based on this act, all foreign companies that invested over $20 million in Iran's booming oil and energy sector were punished. Political analyst Mohammad Hassan Khani says he can describe these sanctions in one word.
They are simply illegal. I mean, there is no legal basis on imposing sanctions against the country. According to international law, according to the principles of the United Nations, the UN Charter.
There were many ups and downs in the few years that followed the passage of the bill in Congress. At some point, Washington even considered easing sanctions, but any hopes of a possible retreat from these tough measures died the day US President George W. Bush signed the Iran-Libya Sanctions Act into law. That day was August 5, 2001. In 2006, Washington imposed sanctions on Iran's Sadrat, or export bank. Till then, Iranian financial institutions weren't allowed to directly access the US financial system, but they were permitted to do so indirectly through banks in other countries. These new set of sanctions meant that this particular bank could no longer deal with the US financial system, even indirectly. 1 year later, in 2007, five Iranian banks were put on this financial blacklist.
We are hungry for change, and we are ready to believe again.
Then came Barack Obama and a promise of change, but the changes that were promised never came. On June 24, 2010, the Comprehensive Iran Sanctions, Accountability and Divestment Act was passed. 1 week later, President Obama signed it into law. Now Iran's most prized non-oil exports became the target of sanctions: Persian rugs, pistachios, and caviar. The threat of more sanctions never seemed to leave Iran's sight. In May 2011, a bipartisan group of senators in Washington introduced new sanctions in response to Iran's nuclear activities. But that wasn't the last of it. On May 24, 2011, Washington announced new sanctions against Tehran, targeting seven foreign companies, including the Israeli firm Ofer Brothers Group. But the head of Iran's Chamber of Commerce says this is all a publicity stunt. Mohammad Nahavandian says it's against Iranian law to do any kind of business with Israel. Nahavandian believes Washington is doing this because it's upset that many countries have opted to do business with Iran with open arms. The head of Iran's Trade Promotion Organization told Iran today that these pressures have actually done little to hurt Tehran's international business transactions.
آمارها نشون میده که عملکرد تجاری ما بهبود پیدا کرده به شکلی که در حوزه‌های مختلف کشورهای حوزه خلیج فارس، حوزه اروپا، حوزه اقیانوسیه، حوزه آسیان، حوزه کشورهای همجوار بجز در حوزه صادرات به کشورهای اروپایی که ما رقم کمی رو کاهش داشتیم در سرجمع تجارتمون با همه این کشورها سرجمع تجارت سرجمع افزایشی بوده حتی با حوزه اروپا هم سرجمع افزایشی بوده.
Despite objections from Iran and many other countries around the world, the sanctions kept on coming. But this time around, Iran decided to do something about it. On May 29, 2011, the Iranian parliament slapped sanctions on a list of current and former U.S. officials, ranging from former Defense Secretary Donald Rumsfeld to U.S. Army General Ray Odierno, one of the top commanders of U.S. forces in Iraq. Others on the list include Jeffrey Miller, the former commander of the U.S. Navy detention facility at Guantanamo Bay, and William Rogers, who was responsible for bringing down an Iranian Airbus plane on June 3, 1987, which killed 290 people. In early 2003, talks about Iran enriching uranium heated up. Tehran said it needed this to produce electricity for the country's growing population. Iran was adamant that everything was done according to the book of international law. It even gave a green light for inspectors from the International Atomic Energy Agency, the IAEA, to come and visit the power plant where the enrichment was taking place. As a sign of goodwill, Tehran even stopped enriching uranium for a while back in 2004. But under pressure from Washington, the IAEA said it wasn't sure that Iran was not pursuing undeclared nuclear activities. And so, the case of Iran's nuclear program was referred to the UN Security Council. The immediate aftermath of that was sanctions and more sanctions. Right before the Christmas of 2006, the UN Security Council passed Resolution 1737. Supply of nuclear-related materials and technology was banned to Iran. The Security Council opted to freeze the assets of key individuals and companies it said were related to Iran's nuclear program. But how far will targeting individuals go in terms of hurting Iran?
بیشتر کسانی هم که من دیدم حالا توی لیست تحریم‌ها یا حداقل اون اطلاعی که من دارم این است که مراوده‌ای یا روابط چندانی هم با خارج ندارن ولی خب اگر این گسترش پیدا کنه منجر به فشارها و آسیب‌هایی خواهد شد مثل اون چیزی که ما در مورد آقای دکتر صالحی دیدیم که باعث شد که ایشون نتونه به اروپا سفر بکنه که شنیدم تحریم ایشون رو هم لغو کردن.
American historian Gareth Porter is certain that targeting individuals is not the way to go if the West wants to hurt the Iranian economy.
The only way that sanctions can get any real traction on Iran is to actually influence its economic situation more broadly. The idea of targeting sanctions against individual officials in terms of visas and frozen assets in foreign countries obviously is not going to have any significant effect on Iranian policy. And that's quite well understood, I think, by people who are following the sanctions issue.
On March 24, 2007, the UN Security Council passed yet another resolution that imposed an arms embargo and added more names to the list of companies and individuals whose assets it was planning to freeze. By the following March, these sanctions were widened. Resolution 1803 extended the asset freezes and asked different countries to monitor the activities of Iranian banks, inspect Iranian ships and aircraft, and monitor the movement of individuals involved with Tehran's nuclear program through their territory. Year after year, the UN Security Council added to its sanctions against Iran, and the country's foreign ministry spokesman wasn't the first person to speak out against the legitimacy of such actions.
جمهوری اسلامی ایران چون احساس میکنه که هیچ منطقی و هیچ چارچوب حقوقی برای این اقدامات وجود نداره، هم مصوباتی که در شورای امنیت بر علیه ملت ما تصویب شده رو بی پایه و اساس میدونه و هم اقدامات بدتر و زشتری که توسط آمریکایی‌ها یا اروپایی‌ها فراتر از حتی قطعنامه‌های شورای امنیت داره به تصویب میرسه. ما فکر میکنیم همه این اقدامات به خاطر اینه که ملت ما رو از پیشرفت خودشون باز بدارن و مانعی ایجاد کنن.
June 9th, 2010. Tehran is now banned by the Security Council from taking part in any activities related to ballistic missiles. The arms embargo is tightened, and even more individuals believed by this world body to be involved in Iran's nuclear activities are targeted. On April 12, 2011, the European Union decided to tag along as well. The EU issued sanctions and punitive measures on 32 Iranian officials for human rights abuses. While it seemed that the EU was following in the footsteps of the United States, some political analysts believe this whole scenario could end up being a lose-lose situation.
In the long run, of course, Iranian is going to somehow get some hurt, but the Europeans also will lose. So it's a lose-lose equation, not a win-win or a lose-win. So both sides will suffer. So in that sense, we can question the very rationality of such a decision made by the European Union.
Ramin Mehmanparast even went as far as to say that these sanctions could end up hurting the European side more than Iran.
وقتی که مثلا شرکت‌هایی رو از معامله تجاری با ایران یا سرمایه‌گذاری در ایران منع می‌کنن، معنیش اینه که اون شرکت‌ها دچار ضرر زیان میشن و با این بحران اقتصادی جدی که در کشورهای اروپایی و غربی وجود داره، خب معنی این کار یعنی که بیکار شدن تعداد زیادی از مردم تو این کشورها و ما جداً نگران وضعیت داخل همین کشورها هستیم.
So have these sanctions been everything they were cracked up to be? There are those who believe that these sanctions were successful in their mission. One of these people is Ali Rashidi, a member of Iran's Economists Association.
اون صدمه‌ای که این تحریم‌ها به اقتصاد ایران و واحد تولیدی زده بی‌نهایت وسیع و عمیقه. یعنی من با مقایسه وضع فعلی با وضع قبل از انقلاب و روابط تولیدکنندگان ایرانی با رقباشون با تولید کنندگان خارجی این دوتا رو مقایسه بکنیم ببینیم وضعیت زمین تا آسمان فرق کرده.
While top Iranian economist Saeed Laylaz believes these sanctions have been effective, he doesn't think they succeeded in bringing Iran's economy to its knees.
مسئله تحریم ها به نظر من برای اقتصادی مثل اقتصاد ایران به هیچ وجه مسئله مرگ و زندگی نبود. هنوز هم نیست. یعنی هنوز هم من معتقد نیستم که تحریم های بین المللی علیه ایران حتی با شدت فعلی می تواند اقتصاد ایران رو به زانو در بیاره. البته این تحریم ها اثر داره، البته زیان باره، البته برای ما هزینه های گزافی به بار میاره، ولی قادر به نابود کردن ما و قادر به زانو زدن اقتصاد و ساختار سیاسی ایران به تنهایی نیست.
It's true that the prices of basic goods went up. Iran's aging aircraft fleet of Boeing jets didn't escape the wrath of these sanctions either. In the last 25 years, over 17 planes have crashed, killing around 1,500 people. For the most part, Iranian officials have blamed US sanctions for these deadly crashes because Washington doesn't allow aircraft manufacturer Boeing from selling spare parts to Iran. In a 2005 report of the International Civil Aviation Organization, US sanctions were blamed for endangering the safety of civil aviation in Iran. The report said these sanctions are against Article 44 of the Chicago Convention, which clearly states that aviation safety affects human lives and human rights. Should political differences be more important than human lives? That report believes not, which is why it called for international public pressure on the US to lift the sanctions against Tehran. 6 years later, and nothing has happened. Mohammad Mehdi Raisadeh, a member of Tehran's Chamber of Commerce, says despite its promise of targeting the government, these sanctions have actually hurt the Iranian people more than anyone else.
مطلبشون این است که ما در واقع این قدم‌ها فقط متوجه دولت هست و ما با مردم و با اون بخش‌های مردمی و حتی فرض بفرمایید اقلام بهداشت، اون چیزی که برای دارو و سلامت مردم لازم هست، برای اینها ما در واقع هیچ محدودیتی نداریم. وردینگ قطعنامه هم همین رو داره میگه، حتی بیانیه‌هایی که اونها داره، اما واقعا در عمل و اجرا اینطوری این گونه نبوده. یعنی ما می‌بینیم در مورد اقلام دارویی هم این تحریم‌ها رو اعمال می‌کنن، در حالی که این دارو که دیگه متوجه در واقع بخش اعظم مردم هست.
And then there are the people.
این وقتی میشه همه چی هم رو به افزایش پیدا میکنه قیمت ها، از این جهت خب مردم دچار صدمه بیشتری میشن.
هر کی بخواد استقلال کنه بعد راه سختی پیش بگیره.
خب اونا از اون اولش هم اینطوری بودن، دوست داشتن پیشرفت ما رو ببینن، دوست داشتن یه ایرانی به خودش بباله، از چیزی که خودش اختراع میکنه، خودش از دستنج خودش به دست میاره، خیلی دوست داشتن یه نقطه تزریقی به ایرانی ها باشن.
فکر میکنم اگه کوتابیاد باز شرایط هموارتر میشه، حالا نه اونقدرم که به ضرر ایران تموم بشه، ولی خب تا یه حدی که این مسیر راحت تر بشه.
تجربه بین المللی اینو نشون داده که حتی ایران اگر از موازش کوتاه هم بیاد، اونها خیلی حسن نیت ندادن تو برخوردش.
American journalist Gareth Porter believes Iranian people are nationalists and that makes a whole lot of difference in how they view these sanctions.
In reality, of course, I think public opinion surveys show very clearly that the Iranian people are not simply economic beings, they are political beings who are nationalistic, and that the policy of demanding the right to enrich uranium is popular among the Iranian people, and indeed it is demanded by the Iranian public. And I think that the reality is that no Iranian government can now discontinue that policy without paying a very heavy price.
Despite everything that has happened, there have been continued calls for smart sanctions against Iran. The foreign ministry spokesman seems to think that the mere idea of smart sanctions is ridiculous.
من مثال میزنم. یکی از اقداماتی که آمریکایی‌ها به شدت دنبال این بودن در زمینه تحریم انجام بدن، بحث تحویل بنزین به کشور اون بود. یعنی صادرکنندگان بنزین به کشور ما رو به شدت تحت فشار گذاشته بودن و خودشون تو تحلیل‌های پنهانی که داشتن میگفتن اگر بنزین به مردم ایران نرسه، مردم ایران دچار مشکل میشن، این یک نارضایتی اجتماعی ایجاد میکنه، مثلا به دولتشون فشار بیارن. خب معلومه که توی کشور مصرف کنندگان اصلی مردم هستن و وقتی قرار بشه بنزین تحریم بشه، یعنی مردم رو دارن تحت فشار قرار میدن، نه دولت رو.
There are those who say that sanctions on Iran have had an impact, but not the kind the West was hoping for. That's because, according to university professor Mohammad Hassan Khani, Iran has learned to find just the right loopholes.
Iranian proved to be very efficient in finding those loopholes and those areas that they could minimize the negative effects of those sanctions. The business with China apparently is one case.
Official statistics show that Iran's petrochemical exports have grown 15-fold since the year 2000, and the country's steel and car manufacturing industries are the largest in the region. More importantly, according to Mr. Safdel, Iran is among only a few countries that has learned to master high-tech areas like nanotechnology.
ما در دوره تحریم یاد گرفتیم که به خودکفایی و به خود اتکایی فکر بکنیم و در همین راستا توسعه قابل توجهی در محصولات با فناوری‌های نوین و نانوتکنولوژی و بیوتکنولوژی رو داشتیم، به گونه‌ای که امروزه ما در صنایع با محصولات و فناوری‌های هایتک در منطقه برای خودمون حرفی برای گفتن رو داریم.
Iran's deputy trade minister says these sanctions have actually helped the country become self-sufficient in areas that previously needed outside help.
در طول سه دهه گذشته هر چقدر این تحریم‌ها طولانی‌تر شد، ما به خودکفایی و به خود اتکایی بیشتری رسیدیم. به شکلی که من امروز آمارها رو نگاه می‌کردم، در همین یک سالی گذشته ما رقم قابل توجهی رو در کاهش واردات محصولات کشاورزی رو داشتیم، در حد 1 میلیارد دلار کاهش محصولات کشاورزی وارداتیمون و چیزی در حد 5 میلیون تن کاهش در واردات محصولات کشاورزی. و این در حالی است که ما در همین دوره افزایش صادرات محصولات کشاورزی رو داشتیم.
When the comprehensive Iran Sanctions Accountability and Divestment Act of 2010 was signed into law, Senator John McCain asked one question from international companies. Do you want to do business with Iran or do you want to do business with the United States? But Mr. Raisadeh says he didn't get the answer he was hoping for.
به دلیل اون بحرانی هم که در 2 سال گذشته در اقتصاد جهانی به وجود اومد و رکودی که به وجود اومد، طبیعتاً علارغم همه این تحریم‌ها بسیاری از مجموعه‌ها به دنبال باز بیزنس و تجارت خودشون بودن. بنابراین یک مراجع ثالثی پیدا شد، بخش‌های خصوصی با استفاده از این کشورهای ثالث یا مراجع ثالث در واقع آمدن پایگاه‌هایی رو در واقع ایجاد کردن که بتونن نیازهای خودشون رو از طریق اون کانال در واقع ثالث بتونن تأمین بکنن.
For instance, Iran has increased its business relationship with China.
ما در حال حاضر بدون احتساب نفت و میانات گازی حدود 10 میلیارد دلار مبادله کالایی در حجم کلی تجارتمون با چین رو برخوردار هستیم. اگر بخوایم نفت رو به این اضافه بکنیم، به حدود 30 میلیارد دلار می‌رسیم.
US sanctions have angered many governments, including Russia, China, and India, which claim Washington has no right to unilaterally impose US laws on their companies. And that's where they come in to help Iran avert these sanctions, says Mr. Porter.
There are plenty of countries, but major countries, that are prepared to step into the gap if needed, specifically China, Venezuela, and Iraq, because of the ability of Iraq to smuggle oil products. Iraqis can smuggle oil products very easily across the border into Iran. And now that the price has been increased, price of oil products has been increased in Iran, there's a greater incentive for Iraqis to smuggle oil products, refined oil products, across the border into Iran.
In 2008, a U.S. audit report questioned the effectiveness of Washington's sanctions against Tehran. The report revealed that Iran had signed around $20 billion in energy contracts with foreign firms since 2003. Even U.S. pressure on many countries to stop importing gasoline to Iran hasn't stopped Tehran from moving ahead. The question is why Washington decided to target gasoline supplies now that everything else seems to have failed.
It's always been the case that the only way to try to influence Iranian policy seriously has been to really make a dent on its economy. And that has primarily been understood to mean making a dent on Iran's import of gasoline products. It's always been the case that specialists on sanctions have understood that unless you can really affect Iran's ability to import refined gasoline products, you're not going to have any decisive effect.
With more than 30 years of sanctions behind it, critics of Iran's economic policies believe the country is still doing pretty good.
قدرت خرید تولید اقتصاد ایران، یعنی تولید ناخالص داخلی ایران، امسال به حدود 1 تریلیون دلار میرسه. یعنی ما در مرز اقتصادهای 1 تریلیون دلاری قرار داریم. من آمارهای رسمی بین‌المللی رو مثال میزنم برای شما. خب چیز عجیبی نیست، ما امسال 300 میلیارد دلار فقط انرژی تولید میکنیم در ایران.
A Reuters report published on April 14, 2010 said, as long as there is money to be made and economic benefits to be taken advantage of, Iran will always find ready sellers of gasoline from the international market. The report quotes a trader who said, the politicians don't understand markets. Sanctions are cosmetic. Even if these sanctions are mere cosmetics, Iran has shown that it's not afraid to go it alone.